It was a stunning start to the quarterfinals with glorious goals in London and Munich as the first two last eight ties got underway. Arsenal enjoyed a famous night against the holders, scoring three second-half goals against Real Madrid's without reply. In Germany, Inter struck twice to edge Bayern on a night of high drama. We'll review it all and look ahead to Wednesday's two quarter-finals ties. So stay with us for the next 30 minutes or so. Yes, welcome along with myself, Chris Parrott. What an evening of quarter-final action we were treated to. Full-time scores from these first legs. Arsenal 3, Real Madrid 0. 3-0 to the Gunners against the holders. And Bayern 1, Inter 2 in Munich, which will host the final in just over 50 days' time. I'm joined by the European football expert Kevin Hatchard, as well as commentator Joe Shannon. Kev, start with you. It looked good on paper. It didn't disappoint.
It certainly didn't. And I think what it was in both games was a mix of outstanding coaching. I think both Simone Inzaghi of Inter and Arsenal's Mikel Arteta deserve enormous credit. And then top technique from the players that they have. And that combination has proved devastating both for Inter and for Arsenal.
Possibly Arsenal's greatest night at Arsenal Stadium since moving there in 2006. Certainly in European competition, a night that could not have gone better in every possible way for them.
Last beyond the quarterfinals in 2009, Arsenal searching, of course, dreaming perhaps now tonight after that performance of their first ever European crown. And we will begin with matters in North London. Arsenal hosted the 15-time champions Real Madrid. Joe and Kevin describe the action.
Bellingham slips it, Mbappe with a lovely pass, Mbappe into the penalty area, right-footed shot saved by David Raya, who pounces on the rebound. Bellingham's first real involvement, a wonderful slide rule pass, but Mbappe couldn't beat the goalkeeper and it stays 0-0. This is a long way out, but maybe Saka, maybe Rice fancy it. Declan Rice to strike it, right-footed! Oh my goodness! What a goal! Declan Rice has beaten Courtois! Luis Scherry, edge of the box, he's wriggled away from Camavinga, he's not been the defender, Martinelli shot, turned away, rebound, off the line, Marino again, tipped over by Courtois, what a save. Is it going to be Declan Rice, right footed again? It's even better! What a night for Declan Rice, what a night for Arsenal. Back to Mars, Luis Scherry on the edge of the area, infield, Marino, it's three! This is sensational! Awesome from Arsenal! Mikel Merino, the makeshift striker, has just struck one home!
Perfectly summed up in commentary, Joe Shannon. Arsenal were awesome. And this stadium, the move from Highbury, I can't remember it being as loud actually before kickoff, and certainly by the end. Arsenal fans absolutely jubilant, and you can understand why. What a performance from them.
An incredible performance. I think 10 out of 10 all over the pitch, really. It was a performance that was built from the back with defensive solidity that saw Arsenal able to quell that Real Madrid threat and then built through the midfield into the attacking areas and reached a point where the set pieces that have been so talked about over the course of the season obviously helped change the game. I mean, the quality of the goals and the quality of finishing is one thing that stands out, but I really do think Mikel Arteta will look at the 11 that started the game and the players that came on, and he really will feel that he couldn't have asked for anything more. I think if you're an Arsenal fan, then you look at tonight as just about a perfect evening.
Halfway in the tie, of course, and we know what Real Madrid are capable of. Not over, but the clean sheet as well, only adding to Arsenal's glee. Let's go to the first half. It was compelling to watch. Kylian Mbappe had a big chance at 0-0. We saw Thibaut Courtois make some big saves, but even in that first half you could see, Kev, and a lot of talk in the build-up, Mikel Arteta calling this his biggest game as a coach. You could tell that Arsenal believed that they were Real Madrid's equal in that first half, which ultimately, I guess, was the platform for what they then achieved afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, actually, because I think one of the things Mikel Arteta has done really well, and we talked about this last season, actually, from the moment they came back into the Champions League after a long, long time away, they looked like a Champions League team. Mm. They didn't look like some callow set of youths who didn't really understand European football, couldn't really kind of navigate their way through it. They looked competitive. Now, they fell short against Bayern last season at this stage. I think what was really impressive was the first few kind of stanzas of the game, you looked at it and you thought, Arsenal are playing the game that Real Madrid want them to play, because they've been urged on by the crowd, they're trying to throw men forward, they're trying to make an early statement. Real Madrid said, okay, thank you for that, we'll play the game we want to play, which is transitional, because that's what gets Mbappe in good positions, that's what gets Vinicius and Rodrigo running at people one-on-one. Something, I imagine it was Mikel Arteta, flicked the switch and said, we don't need to do that. We trust ourselves without the ball. We trust that we can get the ball up the pitch without taking too many risks. And they really understood that towards the end of that first half, and that spilled into the second half.
58 minutes in, Joe, free kick for Arsenal. How, 25 metres out maybe? Two players over it. I think you said in commentary, will it be the right foot of Rice or the left foot of Saka? We heard it, but talk us through it again. It was the first one was good.
Well, I guess everybody would have expected Saka to take it, because it was to the right of the centre, so appeared to favour the left footer. But for Rice to have the boldness and the courage to try and do what he did, go goalkeeper side against a goalkeeper of the quality of Thibaut Courtois. I mean, the way that he bent it, it starts miles outside the target, curves right back in. We know that Declan Rice is a player who can hit them from distance. We know he's a player that can score free kicks, but you know, on a personal level for him, got to be one of his greatest nights, certainly in club football. And he's a man who's won European trophies before with West Ham United, but it was a special moment and it set Arsenal on their way. It felt as though that goal really upped the belief levels, not just in the crowd, but in the team as well. And they didn't really look back from that point.
It was very similar to a goal Reece James scored for England at Wembley recently. That free kick that you start outside the post and hit with such whip and the goalkeeper can't react. We're talking here in Thibaut Courtois, a goalkeeper who has time and time again come up trumps in massive games in the Champions League. One of the 21st century's greatest goalkeepers. And he's been beaten twice by phenomenal free kicks.
There is a great stat to illustrate that point. Up until the first goal, which he could do nothing about, Thibaut Courtois had saved 21 of the last 26 shots on target he'd faced in this competition, including the last 10 in a row, just to illustrate just how good a goalkeeper he is. I think, because I saw it on the replay, I think we need to give the set-piece coach, Nicholas Jervis, some credit as well. He gets a lot of it, rightly so. There's a replay of when those two players are standing over it. He very clearly says to Rice, you should take this. And he does exactly the whip, as if you're the right-footed option, whip it round the wall. Obviously, you still need the player to be able to execute it the way he did. And then the second, which was equally as impressive, 12 minutes later, Joe. I mean, it was, I feel like it's, I shouldn't be asking which one was better, because they were both glorious, but this one was hit perhaps a little harder, potentially.
Probably was even more of an eye catcher, wasn't it? The way it fizzed quite literally as close to the top corner as it's possible to get. And I think it brought an extra layer of disbelief for the Arsenal fans. Not only are they watching their team lead Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, but the same players just hit an even better free kick into the top corner. And all the credit to him, because once again, Courtois had no chance.
We were dreaming of another free kick on the edge of the box to see if he could get a hat-trick. But the first player to score two free kicks in the UEFA Champions League knockout stage. Ty, let's hear from him then. He was asked on the pitch shortly after the full-time whistle where those two outstanding free kicks came from.
It's been in the locker, but I've hit the wall too many times, or it's gone over the bar, and originally we was going to cross it, and then I just see the wall and the goalkeeper's position. I thought for the first one, just go for it. And Mikhail said to feel it, and I see the outside of the wall, and it went in. And then the second one, I just had the confidence, and I hit it. And yeah, look, it's not going to hit me yet because, look, there's another leg to go, and I'm excited, I'm happy, I'm over the moon. I don't mean to be cliche, but in a few years' time, I think this will hit me that what I've done tonight is really special.
He'll watch those back over and over again. And unsurprisingly, he was the UEFA player of
was
the match. I don't think it should be lost as well, the quality of the third finish from someone who is playing out of position for Arsenal. Lots of talk about no Havertz, no Jesus. Do they need that centre-forward focal point? Are they missing that? Well, Mikel Moreno's strike to make it three, Kev, was beautiful in its own right, actually.
Yeah, it was. And again, Rice deserves credit because the whole game, he was making that run down the inside left channel from midfield, and they were really struggling to deal with it. And so he makes that run, turns them round, plays it out to Trossard. Trossard then gives it to Miles Lewis-Skelly, who, for a player who's as young as he is, was just phenomenal on the night. I mean, he looked like he played 100 Champions League games. And so he doesn't want to take it on because he favours his left foot a lot. So he doesn't want to take it on. It's an angle for a right-footed shot. So he thinks, OK, what can I do instead? And because he sees Marino and is able to play the ball with the perfect weight, Marino doesn't have to break stride. All he has to do is concentrate on hitting the target. And like the Rice free kick first time around, he's bent it outside the post. So he takes Courtois out of the equation completely. It's a brilliant finish. It's another wonderful goal. And all three of the goals were of the highest quality.
Starts with David Raya with a line-breaking pass. Brave pass, actually, into midfield to set off the move, and it finishes with the Spaniard. Let's hear from him now then. A great night for him, talking about how in the second half they were able to up it so impressively.
We were talking in the dressing room about keeping the pace, keeping the tempo. Obviously, with the help of the crowd on our side, that second half was amazing. We started full gas since the beginning. And I mean, when this team goes like this, the crowd comes with us and everything is here.
Brilliant night for Arsenal, undeniably so. For Real Madrid, of course, it was kind of, at the end, you could sense the frustration. That second yellow card for Eduardo Camavinga for kicking the ball away means that he will miss the second leg in the history of the UEFA Champions League. Of course, we have that four-goal deficit overturned by Barcelona in 2017. But in terms of a three-goal deficit, it has happened before. Liverpool did it against Barcelona in 2019. We saw Roma do it against Barcelona in 2018. And of course, Deportivo famously did it against the great Milan team in 2004. It doesn't happen too often, so it's a big task. Real Madrid, 15-time winners, never ever discount them. But they're going to have to be near perfect at the Bernabeu next Wednesday, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got the attacking chops to do it, there's no doubt. You know, you look at that forward line, of course it's capable of a big win. The problem I think they have is that, and we saw this actually in the previous round against Atletico, when they come up against a really well-coached, defensively sound team that will not allow them to play the transitional game they want to play, it's naturally very difficult because Mbappe, Vinicius, Rodrigo, they thrive on space. They want space to run into. They want to be able to use their pace. They want to have defenders on the run so when they're in one-on-one situations, they can go past them. But if you've got a block and you get through one player and you slap bang into the next one, you can't really get any kind of momentum or pace into your game. It's really, really difficult. It's not about Real Madrid being bad or substandard or playing, you know, the wrong passes necessarily. It's just about Arsenal being really well coached and really disciplined. That's effort to do that.
Second leg next Wednesday. Tight turnaround now in the quarterfinals. We'll bring you uninterrupted commentary on UEFA Champions League Match Day Live on the Champions League app and on UEFA.com. Might be one of those nights at the Bernabeu. Arsenal will hope not as they search for a place in the semi-finals after a brilliant first leg victory. Still to come, we'll unpick tonight's other quarterfinal first leg and look ahead to two more matches on Wednesday.
You've heard the action, now watch it. Download the official UEFA Champions League app to watch free highlights from tonight's matches from midnight wherever you are.
So next to Bavaria, where the six-time champions Bayern welcomed three-time winners Inter to the Fußball Arena München, and Martin Tyler was watching.
Allowing space for Sané, here's Elise onto the dangerous left foot, and he rolls it for Kane. Oh, by Kane's standards, that was a golden opportunity. Lautaro Martinez, it's a brilliant finish. And a really snappy move from the Italian club. The man from Argentina putting Bayern behind. And it must be, it's Müller! The magic of Müller. You cannot write him off. The stage was set and the space finder has delivered. Barella. And here's Carlos Augusto. Can they get back in front again? They can. It's Fratesi. Sensational response from the Italian club.
Yeah, those two goals from Müller and Fratesi, 3 minutes apart. Bayern with parity, but only for a few seconds, really. But in that, they had a big chance to maybe go 2-1 up themselves before Fratesi's winner. We'll talk about those goals, Kev, in a moment. But we've waxed lyrical, rightly so, about Arsenal's strikes. You heard it there from Martin. Lautaro Martinez's opener with the outside of his foot following a back heel from Marcus Thuram. That was a thing of beauty as well.
It really was. And it's symptomatic of what he does as a striker, because not only is it about his individual quality in terms of the finish, it's about his ability to build partnerships. And his partnership with Thuram has been outstanding, just as his partnership before that with Romelu Lukaku was outstanding. And, you know, it's quite something to be intelligent enough as a footballer to learn how to play alongside different players and get the best out of them. It's not all about Lautaro. It's not about him looking good. It's about him being part of a partnership and helping him to win things. And I think he's almost an embodiment of his coach, actually, in a way. Really smart, really understands the game, interprets how games change, and just a really good footballer. And I think deserves more credit than he probably gets. And I think because he's been so loyal to Inter down the years and he hasn't chased a move or wanted to try something different, he's actually been willing to be a real legend of that football club. I think people haven't given him the credit that he absolutely deserves.
Helped them reach the final 2 years ago. Yeah. And there are a few, I know, who are tipping even before this first leg win that Inter might just ultimately make the next step and be back at the Fußball Arena München to lift the trophy.
I think they can win it, Chris.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I thought before the... Not after timing, I promise. I thought
it's
before
easy
the,
now. It's easy now.
I was asked before the quarterfinals, who do you think could win it? And I said Inter.
Okay.
Now, they've still got a long way to
go.
Yes,
they have.
Including this second leg. And you can never count out Bayern with the attacking quality they've got. But I think they have the coach for it.
And they have this ability. We've seen it a lot under Simone Inzaghi, particularly in cup competitions, but also in Serie A, that they're very happy to soak up the pressure, right?
Yes.
And then when they break, and they could have felt sorry for themselves that Thomas Müller scored 5 minutes from time, but no, they're straight back into that system. And then the way that they broke for Davide Fratesi's winner was classic Inter, really, wasn't it?
They could do gear changes. So they can, as you say, first half, let's soak up the pressure, not open it up too much. We trust our goalkeeper. He'll make some saves, which he did, Jan Sommer. And Carlos Augusto, who we heard there, set up the goal. The wing-backs are so important. And even, actually, the wide centre-backs. You know, I've seen them this season, last season, have one wide centre-back cross for another to score. And, you know, that is how fluid they are, how well coached they are, because one man goes forward and another comes back in and fills the gap that he's left. And, you know, it's not quite total football in that sense, but it's the same idea in the sense that any player on the pitch can play a certain role as long as his teammates help him out. And that only comes with time. It only comes with building a squad that's capable of doing it. But you look at that team and you think, where's the weak link? Well, I can't find it, because they've got a front two that's exceptional. They've got wing backs that are outstanding. Don't have Denzel Dumfries, who's probably the best wing back they've got. Di Marco didn't start. Carlos Augusto was excellent. So, you know, huge credit to them, because Bayern didn't play badly. Bayern made lots of chances. I thought, actually, considering that Bayern didn't have Jamal Musiala, didn't have other players, I thought, was it Coman, who I think is very important for them? They did a pretty good job.
Yeah, you could see Vincent Kompany throughout the game was not frustrated with his team's performance at all, and I'm sure he will still believe they can come back from a 2-1 home deficit to take to San Siro and ultimately turn around that tie next Wednesday. It's going to be very, very good to watch and listen to. UEFA player of the match, by the way, Alessandro Bastoni, with some massive blocks and tackles, particularly at the end when Bayern were threatening to equalise for a second time, but it finished 2-1 to Inter. So two cracking first legs on Tuesday. On Wednesday, UEFA Champions League Match Day Live back 15 minutes before the kickoff in the two other quarterfinal first legs. Aston Villa travel to Paris Saint-Germain. Our featured commentary game, though, will be Barcelona against Borussia Dortmund. And a little earlier, we spoke to our reporter, Graham Hunter, and started by asking him if Barca feel like they're favourites to go all the way.
Well, they aren't talking about that at all. It's kind of verboten, if you don't mind me using the word that Hansi Flick would use. And even if I'm trying to paraphrase what they're saying amongst themselves, lads, listeners, you also have to remember that there's just a non-stop flurry of games for a club like Football Club Barcelona, meaning that there is very little time to talk about what's coming up in just over seven weeks until the final in Munich. The one thing I will say to you is that I was fortunate to sit down and interview Dani Olmo and Rafinha over the last 5-6 weeks. And often when you ask these people, do you dream about something? Can you see yourself? They dodge the question. But Rafinha went at it with both hands and said, I do visualise me lifting the Champions League trophy in a Barcelona shirt. I can't say it'll definitely be this season, but I know I'm going to do it. And it's the closest you'll get to any of them thinking, yeah, we're potential champions this season.
Hi, Graham, it's Kev. I've seen Robert Lewandowski score goals many, many times against his old club, Borussia Dortmund. I think it's 27 goals in 27 games against them. It's a phenomenal record. Have you been surprised by just how consistent and influential he's been this season?
I'll choose my words carefully, because if I'm honest, Kev, I think that there are matches, weeks, months, when you see his age, when you see a different Robert Lewandowski. And that's me being constructive and honest, not critical, but the numbers are sensational. And recently, there's been a renewed sharpness. His seasons at Barcelona have tended to ebb and flow. The numbers less so. The numbers are very good. And I think were he on your show right now, he would also be admitting that the level of service he's getting from Rafinha and Lamine Yamal and Pedri, Olmo occasionally, is elevating his play back to the level you're talking about. Because the majority of those goals, the vast majority of those goals you talked about, were scored for Bayern Munich, when really the team very much played towards Lewandowski in his best ever form, the best ever version of the Paul. So right now, he has surprised me, absolutely no question. And he's one of the elements where experience can be a plus on top of his numbers.
Always great to get Graham's insight on the show. Barca five-time winners, last 10 years ago, back in 2015. And this, their first quarterfinal, or last year anyway, was since 2020. So back at this stage. Graham mentioned him slightly there. Rafinha, Joe, that's another player having an amazing season. Not too far off 30 goals for someone who hasn't always been prolific in their career. He's another player who is really excelling.
Well, I saw Rafinha a lot when he was in England with Leeds, and there's been a dramatic improvement in that time. He's gone from being a player in a struggling side in the Premier League to one of the best forwards in Europe at the moment. As you say, the goal tally, 31 for club and country so far this season, and he's in a Barcelona team that, of course, are unbeaten so far in 2025, putting themselves in a position now where they will feel they are one of the front runners for the UEFA Champions League this season.
And dreaming of one, two, or maybe even three trophies this season under Hansi Flick. So that is our commentary game, Barcelona against Borussia Dortmund. Wednesday's other last eight encounter sees Aston Villa travel to Paris Saint-Germain. Our reporter in Paris for this one will be Alex Clementson, and I'm delighted to say we can speak to him now. Hi, Alex.
Hiya, how you doing?
Very well, and I guess Paris Saint-Germain, having wrapped up the Ligue 1 title at the weekend, they must be really buzzing going into this huge quarter-final first leg.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the writing was on the cards for a while. They'd had it sort of wrapped up, but it's good to get the trophy in the cabinet, and now the focus is firmly on tomorrow night's fixture against Aston Villa.
Do you think knocking out Liverpool has given them an injection of belief? Do you think it's really kicked on their campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was obviously a lot of confidence in camp going into that fixture, but I think leaving Anfield with the victory and the manner in which they did it, they had to face adversity after obviously losing in the last minute of the first leg. And obviously, I think that's given them the conviction that they have found the right formula to finally win this competition, which has obviously been the one they've wanted to win for so long.
Yeah, it's been the holy grail. But is it a different Paris in 2025? I look at the squad, it's full of young players, not necessarily the kind of global superstars we've been used to seeing maybe over the last 5 or 10 years.
Absolutely, that's been the paradigm shift since Luis Enrique's taken over and since Luis Campos has arrived as sort of the strategic director. I think I read something earlier today, they've signed 11 players aged 22 or under since 2022, so which obviously has brought the average age of the squad down, and I think it's the second youngest squad in the Champions League this season, obviously the youngest one still in the competition. They've just gone from strength to strength and obviously full of confidence going into tomorrow.
And there's a fascinating element here in the sense that Unai Emery is taking on his old club Paris. That's going to be fascinating because it didn't quite happen for him in the long run in Paris, but he did have plenty of success domestically, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. That's an intriguing subplot. You've obviously got his return. You've got Marco Asensio's return as well. And I think, unfortunately for Unai Emery, I think his legacy at Paris was tarnished by that remontada defeat in 2017. But obviously, when he was bought into Paris, they were looking for a winner. That's what they wanted. But unfortunately, it didn't quite work out for him. Obviously, they won the league. I think they won 7 trophies during his tenure. But he's a man there that's been and done it on the European scene. So, that would be fascinating to see how he does tomorrow night.
And in a very strange quirk, it was Luis Enrique, of course, who was in charge of Barcelona. Yes. For that game.
Yes.
Alex, which seems amazing they come head-to-head again. Has there been talk of that, or is that kind of not mentioned in Paris, given what happened?
No, I think there's not been much talk of that. I think, obviously, that sort of dominates the sort of narrative around Unai Emery's sort of return. But I mean, his press conference earlier, Luis Enrique lauded praise on his Spanish compatriot. Obviously, he evoked the success that he's had in Europe. They've obviously met each other countless times, whether that be in Spain or on the... I'm not sure whether they've faced each other in Europe. Obviously, they have during the remontada. But, he had nothing but praise for the side that he's created at Aston Villa. I think he evoked the sort of the strength they have in the transitions and the midfield runners. So it promises to be a fascinating encounter tomorrow.
Certainly does. First leg of the quarterfinal at the Parc des Princes. Alex, enjoy the game and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much. Cheers.
Our reporter Alex Clementson there, as he mentioned and we mentioned, Unai Emery making his return to Paris after his stint there from 2016 to 2018. And it's a reunion the Spaniard is looking forward to.
I spent here 2 years and always thankful. I had here experiences. And everything I did before, of course, is in my back. And it's the first time I am again here in Paris and in Parc des Princes. It is something special for me. And of course, very proud of how I am coming back here, playing with Aston Villa Champions League and trying to enjoy this quarter of finals.
Unai Emery there, who's done such a terrific job. Joe, I know you've seen a lot of Aston Villa this season and since he's been there. First season back in the competition since the early 80s. Of course, yeah. They won it in 1982. But when he arrived, I wonder how many Villa fans would have believed you if you'd said, you know, in a couple of years, you'll be in a UEFA Champions League quarter-final and playing as well as they are with the squad they have at his disposal as well.
It is shaping up to be one of Aston Villa's best ever seasons. I mean, they're flying high in the Premier League. They're into the FA Cup semi-final domestically as well, we shouldn't forget.
Yep.
They're on an excellent winning run at the moment, and he seems to be getting the best out of his forward players at a really key time. Asensio looks a great option for him, whether as an impact sub in games or from the start. We know that he's got a great record as a substitute in the Champions League, and he's getting the best, it looks like, out of Marcus Rashford, who's suddenly adding goals to his game again. So I actually think this tie has come at a really interesting time for Aston Villa. Yes, it's quite a small squad and they're playing a lot of football, but for me they go into it with a lot of momentum.
And Marcus Rashford scored a couple of very late great goals for Manchester United away at Paris Saint-Germain. They have Morgan Rodgers as well, who's playing some top stuff in midfield as well. But that is tomorrow. The winner of that tie, by the way, Paris against Aston Villa, will play the winner of Arsenal against Real Madrid. And it is the English side, as we've been talking about, who are in charge after their 3-0 first leg victory. It finished Bayern 1, Inter 2 on Tuesday. Let's hear from Real Madrid's English midfielder Jude Bellingham, who says Madrid didn't do enough in the first leg, but the tie is far from over.
Very rarely do you come to a place like this, score one goal or have one chance, score it and go through and take a lead back to home. So, yeah, just didn't do enough. Got to the final third multiple times in what looked like to be good areas. They reacted really well in the transition and we didn't really do enough with the ball to threaten. Like you said, we had a couple of moments, but in a night like this, it's not good enough. We're still alive. We've still got 90 minutes of football. And like I said, anything can happen at the Bernabeu, anything.
And we couldn't go without getting the thoughts of Arsenal's victorious manager, Mikel Arteta, who was blown away by the atmosphere at the Arsenal Stadium.
Incredible. I've never seen the stadium like this, because before the game, you were already singing, they were already playing the game. And that created the night. We talked before that for big European nights, you need big stadiums that can create atmosphere, and you need individual magic moments. And there we go.
Oh, no wonder he sounds happy and proud, as well he might. I've got a very tough question for you two before we go. 6 goals scored. What's the best finish?
I'm going to go for Lautaro Martinez because I'm contrary. So I'll just go for him.
I actually might have said that myself, just because I thought aesthetically we've seen so many pleasing goals tonight. But I guess the most memorable one that will stand out for the fans when they look back on all the action would be Declan Rice's second free kick for Arsenal.
Absolute beauty. Go and watch those goals on UEFA.com and on the official UEFA Champions League app. Top night of Champions League football. Kevin, Joe, thank you very much. That's all we have time for this evening. Just to recap, Arsenal 3, Real Madrid 0, Bayern 1, Inter 2. The first leg scores. And tomorrow, 2 more nights on a cracking evening of UEFA Champions League football. We'll be back from 8:45 p.m. CEST, 15 minutes before our commentary game kicks off between Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund, plus all the goals as they go in from the Parc des Princes, where Aston Villa are visiting Paris Saint-Germain. And don't forget to download the official UEFA Champions League podcast shortly after every match night of this season's competition. And we are getting to the business ends. But for now, from me, Chris Parrott, and the rest of the Matchday Live team, it is goodbye.
You've been listening to the official UEFA Champions League podcast.